Okay, good morning. This is the last Friday Shmooze of the year, although last night as I was driving home after speaking to one of our alumni about the fact that he listens to the Shmooze, I said, you know what? Chaval, that, you know, the Zman is about to end. There'll be no Shmooze next, no Friday Seder next Friday, but maybe there should still be a Shmooze. And last week, if you remember, I told a story and I stopped halfway. Two people, after I checked my email after Shabbos, two people asked me a question about what the end of the story was. They sent me an email. So I concluded that people are really listening. So why is it when the summer, which I was talking to many students last night about the dangers of the summer, the dangers of being idle for the whole summer with nothing to do, so what better time than to have a parsha shmooz? So b'li neder, I'm going to try, maybe Thursday night, just speaking to the recorder, try to imagine that it's Ki'ilu Friday Seder, just to give people something to excite them, something to inspire them over the summer. We know the summer is, as I said before, the summer is a dangerous time of year, and most of which is because people are mamish idle. People and the Yetzer Hara feeds and feasts very often on people who have nothing going on in the day. So, with that being said, I want to say over a board from this week's parasha that I remember hearing, I would say, about 14 to 15 years ago on Pesach from none other than Rabbi Schneider. Okay? I heard this. I heard him say this. He had a source sheet. He gave a shiur. Anyway, so this week's parasha in the middle of the in Perek Tes opens up. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shana hashenis v'tzeitzim eretz Yisrael b'chodesh harishon leimor. The Chodesh Rishon is the first month of the second year. But if you notice at the opening of Sefer B'midbar, what does the Pasuk say? Vayidaber Hashem Moshe B'midbar Sinai Ba'ol Moed B'echad L'Chodesh Hasheni B'shana Hashenis. That the Sefer B'midbar opened where? In the second month of the second year. Why is it that now in Parshas Barlos we're talking about Chodesh Rishon? We're talking about the first month of the second year. So Rashi right away says that this is one of the sources Ein Muktam Ein Muktam Umu'ucha B'Torah. There's no such thing as chronological order in the Torah. And he gives an explanation as to why it is. And the reason why things were recounted and written down out of order is because of the Gnus in Shal Yisrael. There's a Gnus. What's the Gnus? That we're about to discuss the Korban Pesach, the lone Korban Pesach that was brought in a Midbar. And that's a Gnai. That's an insult. Why is that an insult? Because we know the Klal Yisrael spent 40 years in the Midbar, and they only brought the Korban Pesach the first year in the Midbar, of course, when they were leaving Mitzrayim, and then the second year in the Midbar, they brought one more Korban Pesach, and that was it. So the obvious question is, and Tosus asks this question, Daf Lamed Zayin, Amud Beis, in Kedushin, Tosus asks, what's the Gnai? They were never commanded, right? They weren't commanded to bring the Korban Pesach in the Midbar. They're only commanded to bring the Korban Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. So if Hashem doesn't command you, why is it still an insult? So Tosus answers very, very simply that really the Jewish people were not supposed to spend 40 years in the Midbar. Why did they have to spend 40 years in the Midbar? Because of the Chet HaMeraglim. So since the whole reason why they had to miss 39 years of bringing a Korban Pesach was due to the fact that they did an Avera of Chet HaMeraglim, they did the Avera of Meraglim. We know the 40 years correlates to the 40 days. So that's why they didn't want to open Sefer B'Midbar with that historical fact that they only had 39, that they missed out on 39 Korban Pesach. They kept it for two parshas later in Parshas Baloscha in order not to highlight that insult. But the Maharal wants to say a different explanation, a different twist, and a different explanation to this question: why it is that the Torah mentions Korban Pesach after it mentions outside of chronological order. And he explains the following idea. The concept is that even if a person is potter, and even if a person is not mechuyev, there's still something missing. There's still the lack of injection of kedusha. Even if a person, right? Onus rachmana patre, which means if you're an onus, it's beyond your control, you're potter. You're potter. That has to do with lavin. That has to do with a person is over on something that's out of his control. Okay, you're potter. But when it comes to a mitzvah saseh that a person is potter from, there's still something that's missing in the world. There still should be epis, a little bit of a lacking, a little bit of a feeling of, oh, I feel like I'm missing something. And the same thing, a similar yisod is seen at the end of Parshas Noach. The end of Parshas Noach, the Torah tells us that Terach died, Avram's father died. But Rashi makes a calculation that it's impossible that Terach died then. It has to be that Terach died well after Avram left Haran and went to Canaan. So again, Rashi explains because people would perhaps be mezalza, and Avram Avinu was saying he wasn't mekayim kibud avim. So the Maharal says a similar idea. What's the idea? The idea is that it's not the pshat that he was wrong. Of course he was potter. Of course he didn't have to be mechaber his father and stay with his father if Hashem told him to go to Canaan. No, it's not the pshat. The pshat is that there's still something that's missing in his heart. There's still something missing in the world, and that has to be focused on. The idea that I want to do more and more mitzvahs. I may be potter, that's true. But there's something that I'm yearning to do mitzvahs. And which really reminded me of another vort that we read recently in Megillas Rus, right? After Naomi tries to dissuade Rus from becoming a Jew, right? She says to Rus, second. She tries to dissuade Rus from becoming a Jew, and Rus says back to Vatomer Rus, "Al tivgi bi la'azveich, don't let me leave you. L'shuv me'achrayach ki el asher teilchi eilech. The way you go, I'll go. V'asher talini olin, and the way you sleep, I'll sleep. The way you walk, I'll walk. The way you sleep, I'll sleep." And Rashi right away comments as follows: Ger shabol is gair modin lo mixes onchim. A ger, a convert who wants to convert, you tell him about the punishments. She'im bol achser bo yachser. That if they want to retract and their interest in becoming Jewish, they can still retract. And you see from Rus's words, what did Naomi tell her? What halachas did Naomi tell her? You're not allowed to walk past Tchum Shabbos, right? Nothing to do with carrying, right? You're not allowed to walk 2,000 amos out of an unpopulated or uninhabited area. The way you go, I'll go. You're not allowed to be alone with a man or a woman, right? Depending on what you are, right? That's not your spouse. She answered back, the way you sleep, I'll sleep. So I heard this also from Ray Waxman. He heard it from somebody else. It shouldn't have said, the way you sleep, I'll sleep. The way you go, I'll go. It should have said, the way you don't walk out of Tchum Shabbos, I won't walk. The way you don't sleep, a man and a woman alone in the same room, if they're not married, I won't sleep. But that's not what Ruth said. She said, the way you go, I'll go. The way you sleep, I'll sleep. Why? Because she looks at mitzvahs not as restraints, not as something that's a constraint, but rather something that's positive. It's a positive thing. Everything's about doing being positive. We often grow up in a world that paints Torah and mitzvahs as restrictions. But I hope and I pray that by being in yeshiva, by feeling what it is to be in Eretz Yisrael in a yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and being around your Rebbeim, and being in that kind of environment, you realize that Torah and mitzvahs is not a restraint. Torah is not crippling. It's not. It's the most beautiful thing in the world. On the contrary, it's all positive. And that's really what the Torah is telling us, why we didn't want to discuss the fact that they missed out on 39 Korbanei Pesach in the Midbar. Because there is a certain lacking. We want to do mitzvahs. We want to do more. Because we know that it uplifts us. We know that gets us higher in Olam Haba. We know it helps us enjoy Olam Hazeh. It's great for us. And when I was thinking about this idea, it reminded me of what I thought one of my... Not necessarily a positive... I mean, a highlight of the year per se, but something that was a point of inspiration. You know, with the Patira of my Rosh Hashiva, Nosson Tzvi Finkel, I spoke in the yeshiva, we had the Hespedim, and I spoke about the concept that he once told us in a shmooze. And he said he was once visiting a philanthropist. And he gave a lot of money to the yeshiva, and the philanthropist was asked, the Rosh Hashiva asked the philanthropist if he wants his name on the building. And the philanthropist responded, and he says, I don't need my name on buildings. The whole focus of my life is to put a smile on the Ribbono Shalom's face. That's all I want to do. That's my matara. That's my focus. That's my goal in life. To put a smile on a Kodesh Baruch Hu's face. And Nosson Tzvi told us, I have to go to America to hear what life's all about from a philanthropist. And that's what I want to impress upon you guys. In the last moves of this Zman, we have a long summer coming up. Some of you have no choice. You know, you don't have the schluss to come back here next year. Some of you, Baruch Hashem, have the schluss to come back here. And I'm looking forward to greeting all of you with excitement. Hopefully you'll have an uplifting summer. But if we have that focus, if we have that idea in mind, that mitzvahs are not restraints, they're not restrictive, they're not. On the contrary, the way Rus approached it, it's all positive. The way Chazal tell us, in terms of why we had to switch around the order in the Torah, to tell you that whenever you can't do a mitzvah, you should be upset. You should always want to do more and more mitzvahs. And the whole idea that we should want to put a smile on the Rebbeinu Shalom's face. And that, if we look at life like that, if we wake up every morning and say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, thank you for giving me for another day of life. Thank you for giving me my family. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael this year. Thank you for giving me the ability to walk. Thank you for giving me the ability to see. Thank you for everything you do. A person should be overwhelmed with the feeling of, I want to do more for Rebbeinu Shalom. But what's so important, I think that one of the main messages of the year in Israel, and I said it a few moments ago, and I just want to say it again because I want to hammer it home. We grow up thinking that Torah is restrictive, that doing more mitzvahs and learning Torah is oppressive. But I hope and I pray that that point has been, you've chipped away at that feeling inside. You've chipped away at that feeling over this year, and it's going to take more time. Continue to learn more Torah, to do more mitzvahs, and you'll feel it. You'll feel how positive it is. And then when you can't do a mitzvah, you'll feel as if you're missing out on something. And that will inspire you, Mitzvah Shem, to do many mitzvahs, and mitzvah gerah is mitzvah. You'll be able to enjoy this world much more than you would if you're involved in other things. And Mitzvah Shem, besides that, after 120, you'll be zochah to a tremendous amount of olam haba. Now, I just want to say one more thing. I don't know if I'm going over time or not, but perhaps to drive this point home, just want to say something personal that I was thinking about on the way here. That it's not a major deal, but my daughter this past week, she now has celiac. She's close to 8 years old. She now has celiac, so she can't eat wheat items. So I said, Baruch Hashem, you know, for a whole year she's complaining that her stomach hurts. I said, oh, Gevaldik, Baruch Hashem, we found out the answer. Now she won't be complaining about her stomach. And we're able to help her. As big of a tirchah as it is that she can't have wheat product anymore. Okay. But she won't be complaining about her stomach, which I think is more significant. So this morning, my wife says to me, I mean, usually things are pretty calm, you know, Friday morning, but she's like, I'm really overwhelmed. My wife says to me, I'm really overwhelmed. Like, I don't know what to make for Shabbos. What's she going to have for Shabbos? She usually loves noodles and cheese. She loves pizza. She loves all this stuff. Like, what are we going to do? I said, I don't know. Egg salad, tuna fish. I don't know. We got these sold. It happens to be now that I noticed in the stores, a lot of things are made without gluten. The same pretzels that you get from Osem, they have low gluten. The same crackers that you get from Osem, they have non-gluten crackers. Apparently, she doesn't like those. She only likes those popcorn stuff that... Popcorns, I don't know, but... The store didn't have any more this morning. Anyway, so I was running an errand, and my wife calls me up. She's like, "You're not going to believe this." My wife gets a ride with a woman to a shir every week, and it happens to be I was telling Rabbi Haber this week, Rabbi Elio Haber and Shalom Eishev, about my daughter having celiac. He said, "Oh yeah, so and so in the neighborhood, their daughter also has celiac." Okay, so my wife happens to go with that woman in the car to get a ride to the shir. So my wife told her about it, and the woman said, first of all, she said, how could you have left the hospital, you know, without any directions from anybody about what to do with celiac? That's crazy. When her daughter was diagnosed with celiac, so the nutritionist was there, the doctor was there, and they explained what to do, like what you can eat, what you can't eat. We didn't have that. Okay, whatever, we were in Zocha this past week. No dietitian, no nothing, no hadracha. Me and my wife calls me this morning, and this is the point of the story. My wife called me this morning that this woman dropped off a massive package of food for Shabbos for my daughter. Gluten-free challah, gluten-free candy, gluten-free brownies, gluten-free, like, tons and tons of stuff. My wife was just Miss Paul, and I'm also Miss Paul. Like, here's a person, and I think this person obviously lives with that kind of concept. I want to put a smile on Hashem's face. I want to always do more mitzvahs. I want to do what's right. It's not just... One could say, you know what, if they weren't involved in this, if this woman or this family wasn't involved in Torah mitzvahs, maybe they'd be as nice. Maybe you're right. But the fact is, that we can all aspire to such midos. How often is it that we see somebody in need? How often is it, the person? I don't feel needy. I don't feel like I was so overwhelmed that he couldn't cope. But I was just so misappalled that the person had so much thought and so much consideration to think about the other person and say, you know what, I'm going to do something really nice. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give them a package for Shabbos, for the first Shabbos where the child can't have weed. And if we take that idea, always trying to do more good, more good, more good, whether it's Ben Adam L'Chavero or Ben Adam L'Makom, you deserve to have amazing lives. Rabbi Yisai, so often we feel so out of it, and so, I don't want to say the word, but depressed and sad. The only thing that's going to make us happy and enjoy life is Torah Mitzvahs, which is to continue to grow more and more Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chavero. Good Shabbos.